This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two of the Lombardi Line starts now. We're presented by BetMGM. We have Michael Lombardi with us from New Jersey. I'm Ben Wilson here at the Circus Sportsbook Studios in downtown Las Vegas. Patrick Maher is off. He is back on the show tomorrow. In our last segment, while we were talking all things NFC playoff picture, Michael, started to see the odds board in front of me start to flicker and light up all sorts of greens and reds on my screen. And that is because, especially in the Minnesota-Chicago game, announcement just comes out about 10 minutes ago from head coach Matt Eberflus. Justin Fields being shut down. He will not play Sunday in the season finale for Chicago with a hip injury. And as a result, line has ballooned. Minnesota open 2 at a lot of shops, was up to 5 or 5.5 as rumors started to swirl about Fields' availability. Now it's 8. And are you prepared for the Nathan Peterman experience at quarterback this Sunday for Chicago?
Well, I mean, if you can't look good against Minnesota's defense, who can you look good? Outdoors, you know? I mean, I think the weather's not going to be a problem. But what's going to be the bigger problem is the offensive line for Chicago, who, you know, if it weren't for Fields, right, if it weren't for Fields, they probably would give up over 100 sacks. I mean, they're just one of the worst lines in all of football. And so, you know, I just think, to me, when you watch them, they can't really throw the football. Well, Fields limits how they do that. And his ability to throw. But this team hasn't won, Ben. In Chicago, they haven't won since they beat New England on October 24th on Monday night. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
You know, now they've kind of fought their way back to do some cover. I mean, they, you know, when they almost had Miami beat by 3, we thought, well, that was a good, you know. I mean, then they had Detroit beat, and Goff throws that interception, and then, you know, they go down to Atlanta, they lose there. The Jets destroy them with Mike White. But, you know, this has not been a pretty year for them. I mean, let's face it, they can't really throw the football. I mean, when you break them down, the last 3 games that they've lost against Philadelphia, against the Buffalo Bills, and against the Detroit Lions, they have thrown for 91, 129, and 30 yards. Now, how are you going to beat anybody with that? Now, I know there's some people think that Justin Fields is going to be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, but he was playing in those games. They don't make any plays in the passing game. I'm not saying Peterman's going to be better, but it's hard. And last week, Detroit gained 500 yards on them. I mean, their defense isn't good either.
Right. At 64 rushing yards shy of Lamar Jackson's single-season record. A lot was made of that for Justin Fields and why he wanted to keep playing. But I found it really bizarre watching the game play out between Chicago and Detroit Sunday, where Fields clearly injures himself on a 50-plus yard run in a 7-7 game. I think he ran twice the rest of the game. He was at 104 rushing yards on his first 4 carries. And after the Bears settled for a field goal following that run, were promptly outscored 34-0 the rest of the game. Yet, a team that's out of it, that has nothing to play for, is just in draft position, you know, positioning right now. Matt Eberflus kept him in the game the whole way, and he was taking shot after shot after shot down the stretch. I just didn't understand that from a coach in Eberflus that you and I have been really complimentary of, and I think he's done as good of a job as he could do with basically no personnel this year. Just found that whole situation bizarre.
This roster is so bad. I mean, you know, there are, you know, they've done nothing to really help it. I mean, they didn't have any draft picks. I mean, Ryan Pace left a mess behind. And let's be clear, you know, he left them, and you know, they're going to have to try to make it work with Fields. I mean, they have no choice but to try to make it work with Fields because they don't have any assets to go get anything. I mean, they were in salary cap jail last year, so that's an issue. To me, this is going to be a hard game. Minnesota isn't very good, but Peterman in there, you're so limited. You know, when your offensive line is as bad as the Bears' line is, you're limited in what you can do. And then defensively, they don't have enough speed. They play hard, which is a nice thing to say, but they don't make any plays.
Right, and it's an issue where as much as they've been a team that a lot of bettors have flocked to because you get the excitement of a team that plays hard, that's always getting points. 3 of the last 4 weeks have not come close to covering the spread. Got in the back door against Philadelphia. That was the only one of those stretches. So, again, line now up to 8 for Minnesota. Again, Vikings, it's...
But is Minnesota better than 8 points better than anybody?
Right.
I mean, seriously.
And that's the thing. I mean, Minnesota, only way they move up to the 2 is with a Niner loss here. So, the odds are slim.
I mean, Minnesota on their season, I don't think they've won by 4-3. The 6, they beat the Bears the last time they played them at home. But remember, they're driving the ball down the field. I think it was 29-22, and Justin Fields is driving down the field, and the ball gets stripped out of him, and Patrick Peterson picks it up for the win. Remember that game?
Yes.
They won by 7 in Minnesota. But and they beat Miami by 8. Miami didn't have a quarterback. I mean, I know they beat Arizona by but every one of those games, even the ones that the Arizona they win by 8, but that was a close game down to the end. Like, are they better than 8 points better than anybody?
I'm not believing so. Only one win of the 12 came by more than
but
a
I'm
possession.
Not betting Peterman either, though. No, I could tell you that right now. Are you betting Peterman? Huh?
No way. Your friends Hall & Oates are like, we hear our music about to be called out here with Nathan Peterman. No way you can go for a pick like that.
Oh, you can't do that. I mean, that's so bad. I mean,
don't
my
do that
Lord,
to yourself.
You know?
We
but combining poor Peterman into a situation where they can't block the edges, right? It's still Danielle Hunter and it's still Smith over there. You know, they got to block the edges. How's that going to work out?
Yeah. Well, it's hard, too, about trying to figure out from the coaching standpoint in Week 18. For first-year coaches like Kevin O'Connell and Brian Daboll, we don't have any data to go off of. We don't know how they have approached games like these in the past because they've never had them. So in the betting market, it's hard to just assume that Minnesota will punt the game, same like with Brian Daboll and the Giants, even if we assume that would be the correct thing.
I know Daboll. I mean, Daboll, I know how he thinks because I've been with him, and I know he's going to invoke the Bill Belichick rule. He's probably got a lot of people working on Minnesota, right? And he's working on Minnesota. Not that they're not going to work on Philly, but they're going to a very simple game plan. Get the clock. We're not getting anybody hurt. Our inactive list, we don't care if the league complains to us or not. We're gonna get ready for Minnesota, and every minute that we have is spent on Minnesota.
Makes sense. You would think that is the proper way to approach it. It's also now what does Minnesota do in a situation where the odds of them moving up to the 2-seed line very, very minimal. I would take either – look, it basically takes a San Francisco loss. That's the only way they move up to the 2-seed line. As far as the other game, Michael, that could impact things in the 7-seed – we talked Lions-Packers in our last segment. Again, that's a situation where if Green Bay wins, they are in since they would leapfrog Seattle by virtue of the head-to-head tiebreak, at least on an overall position based on their win percentage in conference games. Seahawks, though, will play before that 4:25 p.m. Eastern game against the L.A. Rams, seeing a line that's settled in pretty consistently across the market right now. As I update my screen here, we're at 6.5. A couple books have started to take some more Seahawk money. 6.5 minus 115 at a couple places. You see, thinking this is as much of a cakewalk as the markets think it'll be here against the Rams?
You know, it was a good game the last time they played. Remember, Geno had to come down the field. I mean, that was with John Wolford game, remember?
It was.
I mean, they had to come down the field to get it. I mean, with Kenneth Walker, Seattle's a different team offensively, right? I mean, they're good. They can run when they run the ball like they did against the Jets. You know, Geno really didn't have to make a lot of plays. But, I think the Rams, knowing McVay, I think they're going to have to play hard. They know their coach is coming back. You know, and I think Baker's got to show that he's worthy to re-sign. I think that's a big thing is, you know, he's got to see where he is with Baker and get him up to speed and see where that goes. So, for me, I think ultimately, I think both teams will play. I think this line – you know, last week I thought the line was too much, especially with the Chargers, because they don't beat anybody by a lot of points, but the Rams just fell apart in the second half. It's a 17-10 game. I still don't know why they called that an incomplete pass. Remember, you see that play on Herbert where the ball looked like a fumble, and it would have been like third, and how that was an incomplete pass, I'll never know. But anyway, the Chargers took over the game, but I think this will be look, Seattle's going to play their tails off. They're going to play for next year. And they can run the ball. And the Rams, where I was counting on the Rams last week, was their red zone defense. They keep people out of the end zone. Last week, they didn't keep Herbert out of the end zone.
And you think about where the Rams have at least been trending since Baker Mayfield came back. Clearly playing hard, even in a 31-10 loss last week to the Chargers. I compare the two teams, and especially with a bad defense like Seattle's, who loses their best defensive player. You think about the injury that happens. Jordan Brooks goes out middle of the game for Seattle against the New York Jets. He's now done. So to me, the line, at least my numbers, it's like a 4.5, 5-point game. Yet the books understand that there was one side that has something to do. It's the Seahawks who need a win to get in potentially. And then the Rams have nothing to play for. So the fact that they've jacked this line up at an extra 1.5, it's a little bit too much to me. And I look at what's happened over the last decade. How about this? Last 10 years, teams who have to win in either Week 17 or Week 18, taking on teams with nothing to play for, have only covered about 41% of the time.
Oh,
clearly an indication that the books
are
making you pay a huge, huge tax that usually doesn't work out well.
but having been in the room, right, there's no meaningless game. Like, I've never been a part of an organization that was wanting to lose the last game of the year that tanked it. Now, I've been a part of a team. I can remember one year we were playing Seattle in Cleveland the last game of the year. We were going to the playoffs. Tom Flores was getting fired. They did their exit physicals. Instead of the players flying back to Seattle and taking their physicals, they did their exit physicals at Cleveland Stadium. So I knew we were winning that game. Like, I knew we were winning that game, and it didn't really matter because, but typically that doesn't happen. And so it's a little bit when we get into this, like, Washington, if they go to Howell, what will he look like? I think that's the uncertainty you get into. You know, Peterman trying to play. If Glennon's got to play down in Miami, you know, that's when it starts to get. But I think Tampa Bay and New Orleans, for example, I think both teams are going to play their tails off, right? I think both teams are going to play hard. I think both teams want to prove something into next year, and both teams' coaches want to prove something. I think you got to try to stay where Indianapolis, Houston, you know, I mean, I don't know what that looks like, but I would think Houston would have to try to play their best.
Impossible to know in a lot of situations. At least the two games that follow that nugget we just laid out, it's the Rams-Seahawks game, in addition to the Jets-Dolphins game, and you have to think the Jets, I mean, this could be a game Robert Saleh coaching for his job, as weird as that is to say, with how they've fallen off toward the back end of the year. Saleh and the Jets here, about a pick'em or 1-point favorite against Miami. Just keep that in mind going forward. Teams usually not very successful against the spread, at least, when they are in a must-win game final week of the year against teams with, quote-unquote, nothing to play for, but as Michael says, no such thing as a meaningless game. Now, let's get to the big one in the AFC South next. We haven't had a chance to dive in here, so we'll do that next. Jaguars, Titans, for all the marbles in the division. We'll break it down next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Back on the Lombardi Line with a big thanks to our entire crew today. Brian Ortega leading the way behind the glass. I'm Ben Wilson here at the Circus Sportsbook Studios with Ortega here. Got Andrew Ingold, our technical director, Mikhail Bala, Sergio Sanchez, Troy Kinch, Rob Moreno, Andre Pariso. Everybody doing a great job helping out behind the scenes. Just to tie up the loose end from the last segment, Michael, there's also a third game, technically, with a team in a, quote, meaningless game out of it against a team needing to win to potentially get in, and that is Cleveland-Pittsburgh. So that's the other potential situation for Week 18. Hey, look, Cleveland's knocked out two straight teams out of the playoffs, technically, each of the last 2 weeks, and you get the Steelers off that very emotional Ravens game on Sunday Night Football and the emotional Immaculate reception game from 2 weeks ago against the Raiders. So that'll also be an interesting spot to keep an eye out for with the Steelers about 2.5, 3-point favorites.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Steelers are playing good football right now. Their defense, their run defense has really improved over, you know, the time after they gave up 215 yards rushing to Baltimore. I thought they were the better team on Sunday night. You know, it took a last-second effort to get them back to win the game. But, you know, Baltimore, we haven't touched on that. But, I mean, we still don't know who's playing quarterback for Baltimore. I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be Lamar Jackson. I just can't. You know, and so, you know, Lamar, that game, Cincinnati, which – We won't know really what that means until we get some clarity there. But this one, Cleveland, I think it's important. I said it last week. I like Cleveland as a pick because I felt like Cleveland needs to continue to show they're coming along. Now, Deshaun Watson hasn't played very well. But they ran the ball and they played better defensively last week, getting the turnovers, thankful to Carson Wentz. So, look, Cleveland-Pittsburgh is always a dogfight. I mean, you know, the terrible towel versus the brown uniforms are always something that the players – this means more because of the rivalry than ever.
To be frank, I have, you know, hard to have had a lot of betting thoughts early in the week with how our thoughts have been with DeMar Hamlin and the situation going on in Cincinnati. But as I look at the board now, I mean, I teased Pittsburgh up last week against Baltimore. Just a principal play. I mean, the teaser legs with the short underdogs against bad offenses in the bottom half of the league this year have been rock solid at over 80%, those individual legs. Teasing Cleveland up to 8.5 or 9. I mean, how does Pittsburgh win this game by margin? I just don't see it.
I don't think Cleveland can beat anybody by more than a, you know, I mean, if they were able to make a play, and certainly there's always a chance for a backdoor. But the way Watson's playing right now, you know, you have to be really careful. And the way way that the Steelers are playing defense. You know, they're making you throw the football, and not that they're great in the secondary, but he has gotten this team playing really well, and their offensive line has shown dramatic improvement from the opening game of the year, even though they beat Cincinnati creating five turnovers, to where they are right now.
Right. Yeah, the Pittsburgh team going into the Baltimore game from Sunday night, the previous 5 weeks, top 10 in both pass and run defense on the EPA per play basis. Not something I would have thought. But the Steelers have shown tremendous improvement under Mike Tomlin. So that, again, the three games that will matter for the seven seed, you have Jets, Dolphins, Patriots, Bills, and then Steelers and Browns between the Steelers, Dolphins, and Patriots. One of those three will get the seven seed this week. There's also the four seed to be determined.
That Patriot line, you know, not to interrupt you, but that Patriot line looks like it's moving. It could be moving. Right now it's at 7.5. And it looks like it could go down. There's some shops that are a little out, but it's 7.5. But I think it could move down a little bit. It looks like it's trending that way.
Some books have gone to 7.5, either even money or -105 on Buffalo. So those are juice 7.5s towards New England. And I said last week I was kind of interested in that look ahead spot with the Patriots catching 10. Number has now come down. Wouldn't be surprised if that gets to 7. Again, so hard to know. Buffalo announcing today, by the way, if you're just joining us, they will have a walkthrough today. Yeah. First time they've congregated in any form or fashion since the Monday night episode with Damar Hamlin, who still remains in critical condition. That is the latest update we have as of early this afternoon here on the East Coast. So that's the thing to keep in mind.
You know,
Michael.
I think, too, we'll know this line's going to be volatile on Sunday morning, because if Kansas City loses – you know, I think this line goes back over the 7.5, gets closer to the 10, because it gives Buffalo maybe a chance. And once we know some clarity on some other things. But if Kansas City were to win, Buffalo's playing for the 2 or the 3, right? You know, they're kind of in between. And depending on what the outcome is, you know, I think a lot of that, you know, that this game might not mean as much to Buffalo in light of the situation in Buffalo if Kansas City wins. That's my instinct. I don't have anything to prove that.
And this is from Albert Breer, and we discussed this yesterday, too, on the show. If a no contest was declared in the Bengals-Bills game for Monday night, you'd have a situation where Chiefs would lock up the one seed with a win. They'd fall to the 2 with a loss and a Buffalo win. But if, and the Chiefs game being Saturday night, Buffalo would go into that game needing a win or a tie to lock up the 2 seed. A loss coupled with a Bengals win could drop the Bills to the 3 seed. So we'll know a little bit more as we go along through the week. But again, those are the three games that impact the 7 seed, at least in the AFC, plus potential seeding for Buffalo.
If you're Buffalo, like, do you really care if you're the 2? I mean, I know you care, all right? But if you're playing there and you're sitting there and you're kind of going over it, and you know, and you want to see where you are. I mean, when you play the 3 play 6, you know, I mean, I don't think you're worried about that. I really don't. I mean, 2 play 7, you might get New England. I mean, you don't get New England again. You might get, you know, hopefully we don't get Tennessee. You might get Pittsburgh, which might be the worst thing for you, right?
Right. It would either be Patriots, Dolphins, Steelers would be the 7. The 6 is either going to be the Chargers or the Ravens. The odds would suggest that's most likely to have Baltimore stay in that number 6 seed realm for now. But there's also the 4 seed to try to figure out. And so Tennessee, Jacksonville, there's no way Tennessee can get, based on the tiebreakers, could get the 7. It would be either the 4 or nothing. And that's what will happen, AFC South Championship game with Jacksonville and Tennessee. The game to be played Saturday night. It's interesting, first off, that, and I wonder how, as a head coach, Doug Peterson might have done things differently. I get the sense that he really felt, Michael, it was guaranteed that the game would be flexed to Sunday Night Football, his AFC South Championship game, his Jaguars and the Titans. But by moving it to Saturday night, Jacksonville's now in a short week. Tennessee has extra rest. Interesting decision by the NFL to do the Saturday night game there, even though the market's still very much on Jacksonville's side with the Jags laying 6.5 right now.
Which I think is a little too much. I think it's a look, I know there's no quarterback there, but I think there is a Vrabel factor here, right? And, you know, I know the Vrabel factor didn't work in the last game. They dominated 36-22. And, you know, but Tennessee turned the ball over 4 times. Derrick Henry's running down the sideline and gets the ball stripped. Tannehill's in the pocket. The left tackle doesn't block. He gets the ball stripped. And then there's a tip ball interception. And the kid jumps in front of the receiver. So, you know, for me, I think ultimately, you know, he ran for 137 yards in the game. He didn't create any turnovers with his defense, and there was some throws. I don't know if you watched the game, but Lawrence made some throws that are not what I would call offensive throws where the system gave him. He just made great throws, right? Like the play wasn't really there, and he just made a play. And that's what great players do, right? You know, when you complete a crosser, like let's take the championship game, Michigan playing TCU, and and Dugan throws the crosser, and nobody's covering the guy, and he runs for 70 yards, right? That's a really good scheme play. Like that, like Dugan's had to make a play, don't get me wrong, but that was there. But when you throw the ball into one spot where only your guy can catch it and the guy's not really open, that's a talent play. And there were a lot of those talent plays against Tennessee the last time they played them. I don't know if I'd count on that to happen again. Not because I don't think Lawrence is a great player. I think he really is. But I think those are hard plays to duplicate. Like when you're watching tape and you're breaking down the team you have to play and you're looking at all their opponents, you're saying, well, we can do that. Well, we really can't do that. Well, we can do that. Well, we really can't do. We can't make that play.
Yeah, we can't make that play.
You see what I'm saying? And so, like, if you're Vrabel, you know, those plays might happen, but they might not happen all the time.
It's exactly why we tried it, and I like to bring up the completion percentage over expectation. We talked about it last week where Derek Carr has been among the league's worst in that aspect, 30th out of the 32 qualified starters. But there's some nuance and context that has to be applied there, where in short sample sizes, you can see quarterbacks make, because that's a measure of the throws naturally versus throws that the scheme sets up for you. And how are you doing comparing the two things? Are you making the throws even if the scheme isn't opening it up for you? Trevor Lawrence has been pretty good in that mark. He's 11th over the last 5 weeks in that respective category. But think about how small sample size can throw that out of whack when it is a very volatile type of statistic. Like Sam Darnold is number one in the league over the last 5 weeks in that stat. Taylor Heinicke is third in the league. You don't expect those two guys to be at that same level over a 17-game season.
Well, but why are they there? Because their offense doesn't allow them to really expand. So they're not letting Darnold – they're not giving Darnold a lot of hard throws. They've done a great job of managing Darnold. They're not asking him to do a lot of the throws Darnold makes. Now, he made some great throws last week. So, I mean, the touchdown pass that he makes to Smith in the end zone was a great throw. The guy was open, but it was a great throw. He moved him with his eyes. He moved the safety, Edwards, to come down, and he hit it behind. It was a great throw. And it was a scheme throw, but it was a great throw. But they're doing a good job of managing the limitations of the player.
Right, and that's why the context matters. And I mean, Darnold has been unbelievable when you've watched in the last few weeks. We'll finish our thoughts, too, on the Jacksonville Titan game in our last segment as we get ready to wrap up the show. But interesting to see the market come down a little bit. Open 7, some money to the underdog Titans at 6.5. A couple books have even shaded towards 6. But up next, we'll get some early Week 18 thoughts from our pal Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber for only $79 and get access to everything we do from now through the big dance. Sign up today and you'll also receive $20 to buy VSiN sports betting hats, shirts, mugs, and other great gear at our online store. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, betting splits, and betting reports. This is a limited time offer, so sign up now and get VSiN Pro access through the end of March Madness at VSiN.com/subscribe. Before we welcome in Harry Gagnon to the show here on the Lombardi Line, real quick, you're seeing, Michael, sounds like Sam Howell going to be the starting quarterback there in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Ron Rivera just said. And it makes sense, right? Like, why are we going back to Heinicke? Why would we play both of them? Give the kid all the reps on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday that he can at least get accustomed to and they can get used to it. Look, he had a really good preseason for them. So why not let them play and see what they have and see where they're going to go for it? It's not going to determine what they do in the offseason in terms of decision-making a quarterback, but it is going to give them some insight into what Howell can do. And look, they've watched him in OTAs. They've watched him run scout team. You know, I'm sure he's probably been really good at what he's done, so they're going to keep giving him another look.
At least the betting market, numbers lighting up in front of me. That's now Dallas minus 7.5. So from 5.5 this morning, got to 6.5. It was originally thought it would be a Heinicke-Howell split. Now it's Dallas 7.5, 4.5 for the first half there as well. As we welcome in Harry Gagne to talk some Week 18 NFL, also a little college football. We got to get Harry's thought on the national championship game too, because Harry, you were just at the Fiesta Bowl. Just a wild weekend of college football with the TCU Michigan game. What was that experience like down in Glendale?
Yeah, guys, it was wild. It was insane. Like I said, there's 55% to 45% more TCU crowd than Michigan, which I found that hard to believe. But I was there. It was crazy. And they were loud. Atmosphere was great. Look, I just think that even though Michigan, how great they were during the regular season, hadn't given up more than 27 points all year, give up that to TCU. And now, and Georgia's defense, where was Georgia's defense too against Ohio State? So I think this sets up with, I think the line's down to 12 now, guys. A lot of money coming in on TCU. People want this underdog. They love the story. But I think it's Georgia's defense is going to bounce back. Everyone wants to see a great game here. But I think Georgia brings the defense this time and wins going away. Stetson Bennett, all he does is win games. And Kirby Smart, best coach in the country.
Yeah.
Well, I think this, though, you know, give TCU some credit. They were able to make key plays that they had to make. I thought Michigan really made a lot of mistakes in the game. They don't take the 3 points. They don't get the call on the right touchdown pass. But when you break Georgia down, right, they can't really rush the passer. And their secondary is very suspect. And so I thought Ohio State exploited that. You know, I thought Ohio State took advantage of it. And I think TCU can do that as well. Now, can they physically match? I thought Michigan would overwhelm TCU. That didn't happen. We'll see if Georgia does that. I think that's why the line's coming down. It doesn't match up well in terms of they can attack that secondary.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be, hopefully we do see a good game. I just think at the end, Georgia pulls away late, maybe wins this game by 17. And by the way, guys, I'll be in Vegas.
Yes, you will.
I'll be there. Come on over. We got the watch party for the championship game at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club. Everyone, come on over. It's free. It's going to be a blast.
I cannot wait to see Harry Gagne over there Monday night. Looking forward to that, Harry. Can't wait to have you and everybody there here in Vegas. 12.5 right now, your line, depending on the book, for Georgia and TCU at SoFi Stadium on Monday in the national championship game. As we transition to Week 18 in the NFL, Harry, I'm not usually a big moneyline parlay guy, but the final week in the NFL season, a lot of times you can tie together pretty logical results and make some money and get some pretty favorable odds as far as the moneyline parlays are concerned. How did you look to attack that with some of the situations at play this week?
Yeah, you definitely can, guys. But I'm going to go a little high on some numbers here. This is a three-teamer, pays even money, three-team moneyline parlay, San Fran -900. Still can get the number one seed. Offense is rolling, even without Debo Samuel. Philadelphia, -900. They lead the NFL in sacks. They've got five guys with 10 or more. New York Giants game means nothing to them. And I'm going to take the Falcons. The Falcons at -200 against Tom Brady and the Bucs. I know Brady in 22 years has never had a losing season, but Tampa Bay does not need any injuries. They don't need to play anybody. They got in last week. Let Atlanta's running game pound away here. And the Falcons, who are a -200 favorite to win this game, take down the Bucs.
I know Brady said he wants to play, but I agree with you. I think this should be a Blaine Gabbert game, right? And one thing about Atlanta, that they got behind the last time they played down there at Tampa. Atlanta was behind 21-0 and rallied back, got the bad rough of the passer call. Remember that play?
Right.
And it kept the ball, and they had a chance to come back and win that. But that's Atlanta. They're in close games. I mean, here they are. They're playing against it's a lot of guts. They're playing last week. They're playing against David Blau, the magician, they don't cover that game. They didn't cover the game at 3.5 before the Blau announcement came that he was playing for Colt McCoy. So, that's somewhat remarkable. But, I'm with you. I think if there's a lot of guys hurt on Tampa, right? We can go through their defense. They've got a lot of guys missing. And they would be smart to rest those guys to get them ready to play in the biggest game of the year against Dallas the next week.
Yes, I think Atlanta just pounds Tyler Allgeier, the rookie from BYU, who's had a pretty good season. He's a bull. He's a great running back. Let him do his thing. They win this game, Atlanta.
Would think that would make a lot of sense right now. The line got all the way down to 3. It was Falcons -7. Todd Bowles comes out, says he'd play all the starters. Now the lack of trust in that statement is being borne out in the market today. We're up to 4, 4.5 on that game, Falcons and Bucks. Harry, as far as Saturday night, that's where Michael and I were going to finish our show with going up next. As Kansas City and Las Vegas kick off the Week 18 slate, as it stands right now, seeing a 9.5 consensus number on Raiders-Chiefs, another start for Jarrett Stidham at quarterback, and you get a total here in the 52.5 range. Where do you see the value in Saturday's first game?
I really like the over, guys. Kansas City first in yards per game. They're first in passing in the NFL. And Las Vegas defense, besides Max Crosby, is a joke. The 29th in passing yards against, 30th in picks, and have basically no pass rush, and is 30th in sacks. Mahomes and Kansas City have plenty of time for Jarrett Stidham. Mahomes and Kansas City have plenty to play for, I meant to say. Jarrett Stidham had played well versus San Fran secondary guys last week. He had 3 touchdowns, 365 yards. Him and Adams were really good together. Plenty of points in City on Saturday. Ben, maybe me and you should go.
I mean, would love to if I wasn't on the air at that point, Harry.
I don't disagree. I think, first of all, if you watch the first game, there were, you know, the Raiders moved the ball, had a chance to win that game. They didn't. They'll be able to attack. If they protect, which they did last week against San Francisco, no sacks allowed, even though Bosa created the winning play with this pushback of Colton Miller. But I think they will move the ball. I think they will play as hard as they can play. The concern is if you look at this roster of the Raider defense, I mean, there's guys out there you don't even know of. I mean, they don't have anybody out there. Yeah. They were trying to do it with guys that are around. So I do think, but the concern you have with any time you go down that Kansas City road is what happened last week against Denver. They go 3 and outs in the third quarter. They lose interest. Like, they have ADD. Yeah. I'm convinced of that.
And it's a high line as a result. Chiefs and Raiders 1-point game in the first meeting between the two on the Monday night game back in Arrowhead. So that's the play, Harry, looking at over 52.5. In addition, it would not be a true Harry Gagnon segment here on the show without a little teaser action going into to Week 18. I was able to cash. We got there with Panthers Steelers last week. That was nice. I've looked to tease up a lot of the dogs. Which dog intrigues you to at least tease up here as we go into Week 18?
Well, right now, Dolphins Jets I see as a pick, so I'm going to tease the Dolphins up to +7. Still have something to play for. Still can get in the playoffs, but they need some help. No way, New York. Are blowing anybody out. They're 27th in points scored and in time of possession. Jets' last 7 games, 3 of 4 of them, they scored 6 points or less. In the last 7 games, three of them, 6 points or less. Last 4 games, New York Jets, 17 points or less. And the Bills, I'm going to take the Bills, -0.5 against the Patriots. Awful situation here with the DeMar Hamlin issue. It's so sad. I just don't see the time taking off here. The Bills are not going to lose this game at home. A lot to play for with Hamlin, with the number 1 seed on the line too. They will not lose at home to New England. And by the way, they've beaten them 5 straight times. They've already beaten them by 14 in New England this year. Bills -0.5 with the Dolphins +7.
Yeah, they have a hard time making the Bills punt the Patriot defense. I think this is a hard game to handicap because we don't have all the answers on what could happen down the road in terms of seeding and all those things because unfortunately of the DeMar. So I'm with you. I mean, they have dominated the Patriots in the last since the win game. They have dominated the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we think that look, the situation at least teasing Miami up. You're looking to bring Buffalo down again. Lots of still.
You might get Mike Lennon though. Don't cry on my shoulder, Harry. If Mike Lennon comes in that game, don't cry. If you lose that because Mike Lennon enters, don't blame me.
It would be
the tournament.
What an amazing way it would be if you won a teaser leg somehow, Harry, in the year 2023 with Mike Glennon as your quarterback. He is Harry Gagnon. Give him a follow at AAO Harry, the host of the Against All Odds podcast. And also check out the Extra Points Network at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club Monday night free watch party. Also Sunday, too, for all the NFL games. So check that out. Can't wait to see you, Harry, here in Vegas.
Thanks,
as always, Harry, thanks for the time. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Harry.
When we come back to wrap up the show, time to dive into the Saturday games. We'll give our final thoughts on Jacksonville, Tennessee. Also look at the Raiders-Chiefs matchup.
Featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits, like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action in the new BetMGM app. Featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation, planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. As we wrap up the show, some discussion on the two Saturday football games in the NFL this week. Michael talked a little bit earlier about Jaguars-Titans continuing to see the market. As I update my screen, looking to take some shots here on the dog. Titans down to 6 at a couple books, 6.5, -105 or so at a couple other shops as we sit on a Wednesday early afternoon on the East Coast. I still have a little bit of concern, though, on Tennessee from a defensive perspective. Everybody wants to talk about Josh Dobbs coming in at quarterback, but last 5 weeks, Titans 30th on an overall defensive efficiency basis, 32nd against the pass. And while they're fourth against the run, teams have stopped running against Tennessee, Michael. Second fewest rush attempts against per game at about 23.5. How concerning is that to you as we profile this now into the Jacksonville point of view on offense?
Well, I think that's what Jacksonville did when they played them. I mean, the Philadelphia uncovered it, right? Philadelphia said, why should we, even though Philly was a running team, they said, why are we going to run the ball? They're good. They play the run. Let's throw it. They have nobody in their secondary. And, you know, if we throw it on early downs and we can protect without Bud Dupree in the game, you know, we can handle the inside. So, yeah, I think that is a concern. And look, the formula for Tennessee never changes. They've got to be able to run the ball, control the clock, convert some timely third downs, and play and win time of possession, but also play from in front. You know, when they play from behind, now this game they got ahead and they fell behind because they throw it. And Doug Peterson doesn't need an excuse to keep throwing it. He loves it. But this is a different game this time. This is a playoff game, right? The one a few weeks ago wasn't. This is playoff games, and this is about who can convert third downs and short. Who can play red zone? I mean, I think this is the first time we're going to see Jacksonville in this environment. Now, Jacksonville's been on a steady climb the last five games. I mean, they're seventh in the league over the last five games. They're ninth in the league over the last 10th game. So, and when they get that, and their offense has been so effective, they're eighth in the league in red zone trips per team. Meanwhile, Tennessee's offensively, they're 29th. So this game kind of favors Jacksonville, and I can see why the line is at 6. I had this line at 7.62 to start out with, but I think because of the nature of the game, I think that's a little high. I think that's why people are grabbing the points.
Totally makes sense, at least from Jacksonville's ability to win the game, and it's why I'm not going to shy away putting Jacksonville on a two-team money line parlay card, especially as that line continues to drop a little bit. Just having the confidence in them to win the game. Defense over the last 5 weeks has also been great. And as much as we profile Trevor Lawrence at quarterback and that offense's growth, sixth in the league over the last five, top eight against the run now in the NFL, 10th against the pass. But that run defense number is the one that stands out to me with Derrick Henry, the running back for Tennessee, back at practice. And that being the key thing you have to slow down if you're Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, they're 15th in the league in first downs per play. So they've done a good job. Their points per play defensively, they're eighth in the league. So they've done a good job. They've really come a long way. And where they've made a great advantage, and they've really kind of stepped up their game, is they were extremely bad earlier in the year in terms of forcing incomplete passes and doing those kind of things. But they've stepped that up. Now, where they're not great is sack per play, right? Both these teams don't really rush the quarterback very well. And Jacksonville's not great on third down. But where they are good is forcing incomplete passes. And I think this game's going to come down to one thing that determines this is penalties, right? So Tennessee, for as well coached as they are, they're not talented enough, so their players make a lot of mistakes. They're 28th in the league in penalties. And if they get behind because of a holding call, if they get behind because of something, they're not built offensively to overcome second and 20.
Right. That's the one thing you'll have to keep in mind watching the game going forward. And where does the market go expecting some of the Titan players to be back from injury after almost everybody sat last week against Dallas, having extra rest The extra rest, I mean, that you can speak to this. You don't get it a lot this late in the year because usually the schedule profiles in a way where teams are on equal rest, but that has to matter, I would think, even more so in Week 18 than compared to, say, a Week 4. And Tennessee does have that edge coming into this one.
Yeah, and Tennessee loves this role, right? They love being the dog. They love going on the road. They love going in New England. You know, nobody gives them a chance. They beat Tom Brady in his last game. They love going into Baltimore and playing, you know, Baltimore with Lamar Jackson and, you know, shutting them down. I mean, they relish this. I mean, they love, you know, they run to fear. They don't run away from it, right? They really do. They love it. And it's partly their head coach, right? That's kind of how he is. He believes in that. So, you know, I think this will – look, they're not a talented team, we know that, but they found ways to win. I mean, any team that can go from the middle of the second quarter until overtime with getting one first down and staying in overtime against Kansas City is fairly remarkable. But they've lost a lot of guys. I think one of the big injuries is David Long, their inside linebacker. I don't anticipate he's back this week.
Right.
I think that's really been a concern. And so without him, it hurts, but they play hard. And they will put some pressure. And they're looking at that tape, like I said earlier, saying, wait a minute, those are great throws that Lawrence makes. Can he do that again?
And while, yes, you expect some to come back for Tennessee still, like Long remains on IR, Hooker, Fulton, Cole, Simmons, four defensive starters remain questionable heading into this week. Expect to see those guys limited at practice. Same deal with Nicholas Petit-Frere, the starting right tackle for Tennessee. All things to monitor leading into Saturday's game number two. Game one is Chiefs-Raiders, line consensus 9.5. It actually went down as low as 7.5. Money coming back into the market today, Michael, on Kansas City. In Las Vegas here at Allegiant Stadium, 52.5-year consensus total. I look at the numbers from Jared Stidham, even in a small sample size last week, but against arguably the best defense in the league, his completion percentage over expectation numbers third in the league last week at over plus 13 relative to his actual, his expected completion percentage, which was about 58% a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Matt Castle said earlier in the show is true. He's just comfortable in the system. He knows it. I was impressed with his leadership. I was impressed with his moxie. You know, I think people lose sight of Stidham's background. You know, he's a five-star kid coming out of Stephenville, Texas, got highly recruited all throughout the country, went to Auburn, you know, and then Gussie's offense wasn't really suited for him, so he transfers to Art Briles, and he plays well there. And there was high hopes in New England for him when Josh had him there, and then he got injured. Had a back injury and never could get going. And now he is. And he took some heavy hits, but they did a really good job. He got rid of the football. He didn't hold it. The offensive line hung tough. They ran the ball more effectively against San Francisco than I think any team did. It wasn't great, but they weren't getting minus 1 yard on a carry. Like, they were able to have some balance. And unfortunately, he just made the throw to Bosa because Bosa pushed Miller back in the pocket, or else I think they got a chance to win that game with a touchdown. So it's going to take a Herculean effort because the Raider defensively, you know, is really, they're not very good. And they're playing a bunch of guys that probably will not be, not probably, won't be on the team next year because they're on their backups to the backups. I mean, without Perryman, without all the corners that they've lost, it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, look, the last time they played, they tried to take Kelce out of the game. He scored four touchdowns. Now, he had averaged, what, I think 4 yards a catch on four, but he had four touchdowns. Yeah. So it's a hard game.
That was the thing coming in. You figured, okay, you got to take him out of the game, and then it didn't really work that way. Still was able to get his. It was also impressive, too, though, the fact that people might look and say, okay, well, was this just a one-game thing where maybe San Francisco was taken off guard and we're kind of holding guys back a little bit, playing off coverage. But, I mean, the air yards, too, show that Stidham was pushing the ball down the field, was not fearful of that really good defense. That, to me, in some of these cases, when you have a new quarterback coming in, like, I value that. The fact that he was averaging, I think it was 11 yards on average, his air yards down the field, not afraid to push the ball, and against a Chiefs secondary that has been very very mediocre, you got to like that formula coming in.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the Chiefs have problems, covering on the outside, and we'll have to look at the injury situation at corner for them, but he gave his receivers a chance to make a play. I mean, he throws the ball up there for Waller. Waller comes down with it. I mean, he's got a 6'6 guy going against a 5'10 safety. You got to give him a chance to do that.
And at least I'm looking at the updated Chiefs depth chart coming in as of right now, very early in the week. And most teams cancel their media availability yesterday in respect to what's going on with Daron Hamlin. And as we wait for more information on him, but at least coming in for now, Chiefs showing Legarius Sneed as a questionable. And that is it for now. McDuffie, no injury designation. We'll see if that changes as we go on throughout the week. So we'll see on that. It would make sense, though, if the Raiders kept this within the number, though, right? I mean, a 9.5 at home is a big number to lay for Kansas City.
Yeah, it really is. And Kansas City gets bored. I mean, now they against do. Seattle, they were able to hang in there, but they get bored.
Michael, great to be back with you as well today. Really fun show for us. Always a pleasure to be with you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben.
Absolutely. And thanks to our guest today, Matt Cassell from NBC Sports Boston. Gave us some tremendous insight, the former NFL quarterback. Thanks as well to Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast. Thanks as well to our producer, Brian Ortega, from Behind the Glass. I neglected to mention Aramis Westfall earlier. Aramis also helping us out behind the scenes. When we come back on VSiN, it is the start of Big Bets. Dave Ross, Amal Shaw from the South Point.